is United States against Pappas.
Good morning. May it please the Court.
Mr. Koenig.
My apologies. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I represent the United States in this criminal prosecution against Ted Pappas for possession of child pornography. And incidentally, it may not be clear from my brief, and certainly not clear from my opponent's brief, that the images upon which the three charges in the indictment are founded are not the images referred to in the search warrant affidavit. They are images that were recovered from Mr. Pappas' home computer and a floppy disk that was found in his residence. This appeal obviously turns on the question of whether Agent Hansen's reliance on a search warrant issued by Magistrate Judge Callahan falls within the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule. Leon and cases from this circuit that interpret Leon, such as Harju, have repeatedly emphasized that because the exclusionary rule comes at a high social cost, it should only be applied when it will have a deterrent effect. And those situations are relatively rare. Leon refers to the exclusionary rule as an extreme sanction and says that it will be the unusual case in which it will further the exclusion of evidence will further the purposes of the rule. I would submit this is not the unusual case in which the rule ought to be deployed. Specifically, Special Agent Hansen's affidavit was not so deficient as to render belief in the existence of probable cause entirely unreasonable.
Conceding that there was no probable cause?
The government is not raising the issue of probable cause on appeal, Your Honor. I would concede that it's a close question, at the very least, especially in light of this Court's decisions in Prieto, Wentz, and Doan, United States versus Doan. But, of course, under Leon, it's possible for an agent to act reasonably with something less than probable cause. What we had here in the affidavit was 11 images being sent to Mr. Pappas over a three-week period of time containing images of child pornography. And I would ask the Court to look at that fact from both sides of the equation. If you're the sender of child pornography, if you're interested in this material, do you send it to a complete stranger 11 times over 3 weeks, given the dangers of apprehension? An email has a return address, just like a letter.
Probable cause. That's why I'm asking. Some of your arguments about Leon seem to be arguments that there was indeed probable cause.
Well, as I say, I think it's a close question. Neither I nor the magistrate judge nor the agent had the benefit of some of the more recent cases from this circuit on staleness in particular. 18 months, I think, now under Prieto Wentz has to be regarded as a fairly long period of time. I could be wrong about that. The Court has refused to draw a bright-line rule even in Prieto Wentz, which, by the way, was a Leon case, a case in which Leon saved the warrant.
What about Golubsky? This is the sender from California, right?
Golubsky?
What's his name? Golubsky. Isn't that the sender?
Yes, sir. Golubsky.
Yeah, okay. He's been found out and prosecuted or done something out in California. And so there, the question I have is, were there others? Was this sort of a pattern that they had detected from him where he was sending multiple stuff? That is, when you want to put it in his shoes, he's not going to be taking a lot of risks. Obviously, he got caught, so he must have done something. But taking a lot of risks to just send things willy-nilly, and if after 11 times, if somebody says, I don't want any more or something, instead of calling the cops. But that's, I guess, what you're saying. He wouldn't do that if he thought he were sending this to a person that might call the police.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I don't know for certain how many referrals grew out of the Golubsky case. Typically, they radiate outwards, which is one of the reasons it took 18 months to get this in front of a magistrate judge, frankly. You start with somebody in San Diego, and you figure out who he's corresponding with, and you move outwards from there. But I also think you have to look at this from the viewpoint of the recipient. It's at least a permissible inference that Mr. Pappas was a willing recipient because he didn't do anything when he received the emails. He didn't go to law enforcement.
Well, with regard to this three-week period, the affidavit says that it took place over a three-week period, but at least three of them were sent on the first day of that period. There's nothing in the affidavit about when the other eight were sent.
So, I believe somewhere in the record there is a breakdown. I'm sorry, I don't have the citation.
But before the magistrate judge, that was broken down as to when the others...
Not in the search warrant affidavit, I'm afraid, no.
You know, it makes it more likely that the defendant was a willing recipient if they were spread out over the 3 weeks rather than all of them coming on the first day of that 3 weeks.
That's right. I believe the statement in the affidavit... That the child porn emails spanned that three-week period is accurate. Were they clustered in little groups here and there, or maybe more of them at the beginning? That's possible. Again, I'm sorry, I don't have the citation to the record. I'm quite certain it's in there. Just to conclude, is probable cause questionable? Perhaps. Certainly, after Prieto-Wentz, it's debatable. But the purpose of the exclusionary rule is not to correct legal error by magistrate judges. It's to deter misconduct by law enforcement officers. And I would like the panel to ask itself what the agent ought to have done better than she did under the circumstances and under the governing law at the time. Where is the bad conduct that would be deterred by a ruling upholding Judge Clavert in this case?
Are you talking about agent? You don't mean Hansen, do you? You're not talking about the one who wrote the affidavit. Was she part of the execution of this search?
The agent's name was Elizabeth Hansen. And my question is just, what ought she to have done more than she did?
Well, he was asking whether she participated in the execution of the warrant.
Yes, I believe she did, and she also interviewed the defendant.
Okay, because the reason I asked that is because if someone else was going under this, they're going by an affidavit that's been approved by a magistrate judge, somebody consulted with the U.S. attorney and all that sort of thing. She's going in with more knowledge than another officer would have. That's all I'm asking.
Well, and finally, you know, what case ought she to have looked at in 2006 that would have told her, gee, maybe Magistrate Judge Callahan shouldn't have issued this search warrant.
Well, maybe she shouldn't have put all the boilerplate in.
Well, right.
Because that case came subsequent to the affidavit, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think Prieto-Wentz also at least signals a different direction on staleness. There is no such case. And, you know, it's all well and good to say that these were innate Fourth Amendment principles and they should have been obvious to the agent. But that would also be true of the agents in Prieto-Wentz and Doan, and yet Leon saved the warrants in those cases. So we would ask the panel to reverse and remand for further proceedings.
Well, yeah, Leon doesn't save the warrant, it saves the search.
Correct. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Shello.
Your Honor. My name is Jim Shello. My daughter, Robin, and I represent Ted Pappas. Let me start with the question that was posed by my distinguished colleague. What should she have done? That is, what should Elizabeth Hansen have done that she didn't do? And the answer, unfortunately, is very straightforward. She should have thought about what she had drafted. It is clear, without Prieto-Wentz, without Weber, without any case law, that if you put in a profile, and whether you're talking about a profile of a child pornographer collector or a bank robber, no matter what profile you put in an affidavit for a search warrant, the fundamental common sense logical question is, what has this got to do with the defendant? Does he meet the profile? This is like saying This is the profile of a bank robber that sticks up banks with a gun. What does it have to do with this person and whether you're going to find a gun in his house? And the answer is nothing. Now, you can approach it in a common sense way. You can approach it by parsing the logic that the general premise is this is the profile of people who collect child pornography.
Why do you think Magistrate Judge Callahan issued this warrant? Do you think he's incompetent?
I think that he has been in his... I'll answer the question. I think that he is conditioned by a lifetime of service as an assistant U.S. attorney. I think that he trusts U.S. attorneys and trusts agents. I think he's been in the job a long, long time.
So you think
and I think he made a mistake in this case. I've known Judge Callahan since I think he was an assistant district attorney. He's not a bad man. He's not a dumb man. He's not an incompetent man.
The district court did not find that he abandoned his role as a neutral magistrate.
Right. No, it didn't.
The finding of the district court is based on the face of the warrant that the officer should have known it didn't contain probable cause. Right.
Well, yes, and but I'd like to footnote that, if I may, for a minute, Judge.
That's why I'm asking the question. If any reasonable officer would have known this affidavit was insufficient, then any reasonable magistrate judge had to do
yes,
this instance.
And he was not a reasonable magistrate in this instance. This is not a character flaw. This is one mistake over a long and distinguished career.
One other question, Mr. Shelley.
Yes, sir.
Prideaux itself said that Leon allowed the evidence to be used. Why isn't that equally true here?
Because, first of all, Leon only applies where there is at least some sort of colorable substance. Leon uses the word substantive, that the affidavit is good. Here there isn't anything. There is no way of reasonably believing that that affidavit is sufficient.
Helpful. There's the very same thing that there was in Prideaux. That is, emails were sent to an account containing child porn. The proposed inference is that they must have been requested because otherwise the sender is exposing himself to criminal prosecution. Now, Prideaux didn't deny the validity of that inference. It just said 48 months is too long, so it's stale. And here, too, one would think if the inference is good, it's a good inference, but the argument is 18 months is too long. But if Leon allows the evidence to be used despite a 48-month delay, that was Prideaux, why doesn't it allow the evidence to be used despite an 18-month delay?
Your Honor, my colleague and the court overlooked one thing. This is not the case where the defendant was sent 11 images of child pornography, and you can infer from this that he must have asked for it. At least you cannot infer from it that the sender knew that he was interested in this kind of garbage. And the reason you can't is because something was left out of the statement. This wasn't 11 images of child pornography alone. There were also an additional images of adult pornography that are legal, and another one of questionable age of the woman. And the answer is, this wasn't a result of a solicitation. This was an advertisement. Just like all the other advertisements we get on the Internet.
That, counsel, that's an inference one can argue, as the agent could argue that the inference is that people don't send unsolicited materials that would expose them to prosecution. And normally we think of a warrant as the basis for investigating whose inference is correct.
What we do here is we look to see whether or not there is any inference that can be drawn at all. Any inference that he solicited it. There is no communication between them. There's no evidence that they knew each other. There's no evidence that they had any contact prior to it. He closed down his email address within 60 days after receiving the first of these. That is, he closed his screen name, he closed his email address. There is absolutely no indication that he solicited it, that he wanted it, that he'd ever received it before.
Suppose, counsel, we know that somebody has received 11 recently stolen items.
Yes.
Right? That's all the police know, that a thief has delivered 11 recently stolen items to Jones.
Yes.
And they ask for a search warrant to search for Jones's home. Is there any problem with that? There are two possible understandings. One is that the thief has just made gratuitous gifts to Jones. The other is that Jones is a fence. And one would ordinarily think a search would reveal which of these things is true. Do you think it's such a howler that Jones might be a fence that not only can you not issue a warrant, but Leon doesn't apply?
Now, it differs because what you are doing...
I'd like you to answer my question before you tell me that this case is different.
In that instance, yes, you can get a warrant. In this instance...
All right, now tell me why this case is different.
This case is different because the competing inference is stronger that this is just an advertisement and he solicited nothing. It's not like sending diamonds to somebody to hold for you or anything else of value. This is just plastering the great cyberspace with all of the things that you can get, whether you want to worry about your sexual function or whether you want to worry about what photographs you're getting.
And why is it that one has, of course, probable cause is something less than 50%, but why does one believe that child pornographers plaster the Internet with images that expose them to prosecution?
The way it works, as you will find from the cases that discuss it, and I can give you the cases.
You don't find out how things work from cases. You find out how things work from the world.
Well, the agents whose affidavits are quoted in the cases like to think that what they're doing is to reciting the way things happen. But perhaps they're not, and perhaps the court is right. But what we have is we have essentially a whole variety of websites. Websites where you can get dates, websites where you can get fantasies, and people subscribe to these websites that are perfectly legitimate. And then the addresses of these persons who subscribe or who inquire about them are circulated and sold. And that's how somebody like Pappas gets this garbage.
No, you're thinking about spam, and most
no,
spam
I'm not.
Does not come with images.
No, this is not. I'm not referring to spam. I'm talking about unsolicited offers of whether you're going to learn how to make a fortune in the market.
Yes, that's called spam. That's the name for that kind of thing.
I'll take the court's advice on that. I didn't know how you would define spam. I thought spam was something more than unsolicited advertising.
Did he get the adult pornography from the same source?
Excuse me, sir?
Did the adult pornography come from the same source, Golubsky?
Yes, sir.
Did it predate the child, or do you know?
I believe that it was interspersed, that some of it came at one time, some of it came before, and some of it came afterwards. I do know that it was 11 images of children, 5 images of adults, and 1 image where it couldn't be ascertained whether it was an adult or a child. Now, let me, if I may, Your Honor, the significance of the fact that these are mixed images rather than all child pornography strongly suggests and maybe compels the conclusion that they were not solicited. This is somebody sending out... Excuse me?
Thank you, Mr. Shello.
Thank you, Your Honor. As always, it's a pleasure.
Anything further, Mr. Koenig?
No, sir. Thank you.
Well, thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.